The date was summer of 1991. The place was a wonderful place called Pine Lake, Alberta. It's very close to Red Deer. I was there with a friend of mine and we were fishing. We loved to fish, and we had this little small aluminum boat, 10, 12 feet long, tiny little unstable, but it was the best that we could afford. It had this amazing, powerful 10-horse engine on the back of it. Man, we could just cruise across that lake at miraculous speeds, not much faster than walking. But we loved to go out and fish. We'd been having some luck this one particular time, but we were also keeping an eye on the ever-darkening skies. And we had just brought in this beautiful pike, and we realized that it took a little bit longer to bring this thing into the boat. And we looked up, and the skies were dark, and it began to rain. We had been trolling for a while, and we realized that we were a fair distance from the campground. We were actually on the opposite side of the lake. It's not a huge distance, maybe a mile or so for us to get back home, but with that tiny little engine, we did not want to be out there. And then it happened. That sound you never want to hear on a lake in an aluminum boat. The crack of thunder. It's not a good feeling. And we had that engine cranked, and we were hugging that shoreline because the waves and the wind came up and the white caps began to form, and our tiny little engine at full throttle, we are going against the wind. We are doing everything we could, looking for at this point any spot to pull in so that we could find shelter and wade out the storm. And water bounced us up, and we almost ended up tipping a couple of times, and we were both actually quite scared. Yeah, we're good swimmers, but nobody wants to go in that lake. As we came around this bend, we saw the big campground. It wasn't ours. But we found the big campground and we took refuge. We were cold, we were wet, we were hungry, but we managed to find an open barbecue shack and settle in and allow the storm to pass by. And I understood fear at that time. Yeah, I like water. I hate lakes because of days like that. I would much rather be in a pool where I can see everything below me than in a lake that is dark and gross and that's got that weeds in it that brush your legs. And is that was that lake weed or was that a fish? What was that? Turtles that crunch through fish in a second and they like toes as well. But in our passage today in Mark chapter 4, we encounter a whole nother storm. In Mark 4, starting at verse 35, we read this story. That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There was also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. And Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" And he got up and he rebuked the winds and he said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And they were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." Now, when we put our story into context, Jesus has been a very long day for him. He's been preaching to a vast crowds along the shores of the Sea of Galilee near the city of Capernaum. And Jesus had been teaching in parables using analogies about soil, about lamps, about mustard seeds to illustrate powerful truths about the kingdom of God. And even though the crowds were unable to understand the meaning of his parables due to their unbelief, the Lord was careful to explain everything privately to his own disciples. And as he was in a boat teaching, Jesus decided to take a trip to the other side. So let's climb into the boat with him for a moment this morning. Let's climb into that boat as he takes us to the other side. Now Jesus obviously had some plans for his disciples that they know absolutely nothing about. They've been learning a lot, and now it's time to see if they will live what they've learned. And in this text, we discover five truths about God's plan for the modern-day disciple. You see, just like his parables, at first glance, his plans may be quite puzzling. And that's the first truth. It says, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side." Like I said, it's been a long day doing ministry with him. They've been there watching and listening and learning. I don't know about you, but you sit in a class all day long, learning, and take that class outdoors on a sunny day. You kind of get tired. But Jesus says, look, we're in a boat. Let's go to the other side. In fact, his day of ministry starts back in what we call Mark chapter 3, verse 20. And Jesus has been confronted by scribes. He's been criticized by his own family. He's been pressed by the crowds. So he gets in a boat to get away from them, but still continues to teach from a boat to those on the shore. And for some reason, there are lots of reasons, but here are some of the reasons why Jesus may have wanted to cross the lake. And the first one is simply this, to escape the crowds to get some rest. You see, on the eastern side of the lake, it was far less populated. It would have been easier to find peace and quiet. And verse 36 says that they were leaving the crowds behind. And in order for Jesus to teach and to train his disciples in private, he needed to leave the crowds behind as well. It's really hard to teach your disciples in private when everybody else is sitting there with them. But it says that he explained things to them privately, so he needs to get away from the crowd. So what better than to get in a boat and go across to the other side? And chapter 5 gives us another reason. That's to free a man who is in bondage to a demon. But we'll get to that after Easter. You see, while the Sea of Galilee is mentioned 53 times in the Gospels, and it's the setting or the backdrop for so many of the messages and miracles of Jesus, hardly any focus on the other side. And that's primarily because that side of the lake is where the Gentiles lived, where the Jewish people, they didn't like to go. They avoided that area at all costs. They didn't want to hang out with the pagan people. And it was commonly believed that over on the east side, well, that's where the devil lives. That was his dwelling place. All sorts of evil is happening over there. Don't go there. You see, the other side was unsettling and uncertain, so they'd rather just stay away. But we are called to follow Jesus' plan even when it doesn't make any sense. Jesus says, let's go. Like the disciples, we should go. And incidentally, this is not a suggestion, but it's actually a command of Christ, according to Matthew chapter 8. He gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. And just as Jesus called his first followers to go with him to the other side, each of us, we must go where Jesus is calling us to go. No matter if we're uncomfortable with the people who are different from us. I remember when I was growing up, my grandfather would tell me, Dave, you're going to be a pastor in Manitoba. And I laughed at him. Manitoba? I've never even been there. I don't want to go there. Almost 25 years I've been here now. Because this is where God has called me to be. Now I just got to get over my fear of going to Transcona. Anyways, the disciples, they don't hesitate. They were better than I was. It took me several years before I realized I needed to be here in Manitoba, even though I was told. But the disciples, they don't hesitate. If that's where Jesus wants them to go, that's where they will go. In verse 36 says, leaving the crowds behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. And they took Jesus just as he was, meaning that they didn't make any preparations or gather any provisions. They just were in the boat. Let's go. And sometimes God's plans seem puzzling, and sometimes his plans include problems. You see, the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee. It's actually just a lake. But we call it the Sea of Galilee because it has a lot of the same characteristics as a sea. It's 13 miles long. It's 8 miles wide. It's the lowest freshwater lake in the entire world. And this sea is known for its severe storms as cold winds whip down from the snow caps of Mount Hermon, and it combines with the warm lake air that comes from the west out of the Mediterranean, out of the south in the Jordan Valley, causing these explosive thunderstorms and gale force winds. In fact, in 1992, a storm hit the lake, causing 10 to 12 foot waves on this tiny little lake. And I remember when we were there, we went out in the morning and it was beautiful. It was like glass. And while we sat and ate lunch of the same day, I looked out at the lake and there were white caps on. And I'm like, I'm eating outside. I don't remember. I don't feel any wind. But the lake is covered in white caps. Just like that. And verse 37 says, a furious squall came up. And the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. And this word furious is the word mega. Megas, which refers to something being huge. Huge. And this word for squall is used of a tempest or a hurricane. This is a huge storm that has come out of nowhere. And Matthew actually uses the word seismos or seismic to describe it. This was a seismic event. And the tense is imperfect, it's used to show us and let us know that the sea just kept spilling over their boat. And I don't want you to miss the point that Jesus sent them into the boat knowing that this storm was coming. In order to get to the other side, they had to go through the storm. Don't think that just because you're going through something and some choppy seas that you're somehow being punished for being, I don't know, disobedient or something like that. No doubt God has sent some storms to get our attention, like he did with Jonah, but Other times, storms come because of our obedience. And my guess is that there's at least one or two people here today that are in some sort of a storm. But all of us are in one of three places. You are either in a storm right now, you're coming out of a storm right now, or you're heading into a storm right now. And when storms come, they often come suddenly. They come in a split second, seemingly out of nowhere. And all it takes is one phone call, one doctor's visit, one accident, a job loss, a relationship rupture. All of these storms are severe. And the disciples, they think they're going to drown. And some of you maybe feel like you're about to drown yourself, like you're about to go under. This had to be some huge storm. Because we know at least four of these guys are fishermen from the Lake of Galilee. They know this lake, and they are terrified by this storm. They're freaking out. John MacArthur points out that it takes a dark day when sailors call upon a carpenter when they're out in a storm on a lake. But I'm often surprised that when storms hit, I'm surprised by it. But that's what surprises me, because I shouldn't be. 1 Peter chapter 4 says, "Dear friends, do not be surprised at the painful trial you are suffering, as though something strange were happening to you." The Bible actually promises these things to us. Good news. We're going to have storms. And while God's plans may be puzzling, they often include problems, but they always come with His presence. Where is Jesus when the storm comes? He's taking a power nap. I like this fact. He's in the back of the boat sleeping on a cushion. Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion. Isn't this awesome? He's sleeping on a cushion. Here's the picture of the humanity of Jesus. He is so tired that He is sleeping, and yet He is in total control. He's peaceful even when there is problems taking place. He's sleeping while they are sweating. He's on the throne, and He's in the boat with them, because He didn't keep them from the storm. He went through it with them. And the disciples, they're totally undone. They're just losing their minds. Now, Matthew, I can understand. Like, see, he just collects money for a living. That's what he's used to doing. He's not used to being out on the water. He would be like me, freaking out. I don't even know if the poor man knew how to swim. Right? But they're about to scream out. They're dripping with condemnation in how they approach Jesus. And the disciples woke Him and said to Him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" And I can't imagine they're just standing there screaming at Him. I can imagine them grabbing Him and shaking Him awake. And this literally means, do we mean so little to you, Jesus? Now, before we get too hard on them, don't we often do the exact same thing when God doesn't do what we want Him to do? It's common to attack His character, to question His goodness when bad things erupt in our lives. And while we're taking on water and we feel like we're sinking under the waves of worry, God often seems like He is asleep. I mean, some of us have echoed the agony of Psalm chapter 10. "Why, O Lord, do you stand so far away? Why do you hide yourself from me in times of trouble?" And we feel like God is far off or sleeping, but He is very present. In fact, the greatest storm that night was not on the Sea of Galilee. but in the souls of those disciples. The storm on the sea, it whipped up a storm of doubt within them that threatened to drown them all. Because we too often do this. Don't confuse God's silence with a lack of compassion. Because he cares deeply for you. Matthew Henry, he says that the ship that has Christ in it, though it may be tossed, it cannot sink. Whenever you're sinking under a sea of stress or anxiety, remember this phrase, don't despair, Christ is there. It's only in the storms that we begin to understand who Jesus really is. We learn most about Christ when we are in crisis. Storms are not sent to destroy you, but to develop you. Since Jesus is who he says he is, then we have nothing to fear. So his plans may be puzzling. They often include problems. And he is always with us. His presence always comes with them. But so does a demonstration of his power. See, Jesus slept through the storm, but as soon as his children cried out, he woke up. He got up. He rebuked the wind and the waves. Quiet! Be still! I don't know about you, but in this particular story, I always envision Jesus sounding like James Earl Jones. Quiet! Be still! I don't know if that's really James Earl Jones, but that deep, powerful, booming voice. Then the wind and died down, and it was completely calm. And it's interesting that Jesus doesn't specifically answer their question about whether he cared, because the answer they needed was to see a demonstration of his power. And all Jesus had to do was actually utter a command, and that which he created instantly obeyed. Instantly. And when he stood up, all the forces of nature took notice. Because what he creates, he controls. And when he rebuked the howling wind and the roaring waves, they bowed before him. And the phrase that Jesus uses means that he muzzled it, and it remains so. He made the storms be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed, says Psalms 107. And with a word, Jesus muzzled a major windstorm and stopped millions of gallons of water from moving instantly, because the sea went back to that wonderful glass. Normally, if the wind dies down, the waves would keep rolling. But the wind ceased howling and the waves stopped moving immediately because it was completely calm. Somehow, the winds and the waves were synchronized in solemn silence. So always remember that when the storm shows up, the Savior is already there with you. His plans always have a purpose. You know, the greatest storm that night was not in the sea, but in the souls of the disciples. And there are some things that they were not going to get unless they went through the storm. And while the disciples accused and attacked Jesus, he responds gently and tenderly to them. And this is where truth turns into trust, where learning is transformed into living. And he gives three purposes behind his plan for us. The first is this, to deal with our fear. You see, after rebuking the storms, Jesus actually reproves his disciples by asking them some questions in verse 40. And this first question is, why are you so afraid? It's actually the word for timid. Timid to the point of giving up. They had seen his power in other settings. He was present with them. What more did they need? Jesus asks the same questions. Why are you so afraid? You know who is with you. You have seen me in the past. Have I not healed the demonic? Have I not healed so many people? Why are you so afraid? His purpose is to deal with our fear. And the second purpose is to grow our faith. Do you still have no faith? You see, fear can gut our faith, and faith can force out our fears. Jesus couldn't find their faith. They knew that he possessed divine power because they had seen him perform miraculous healings for many others. And yet, when their own lives were at stake, the inadequacy of their faith was exposed. It's so easy to proclaim solid faith when everything's going good, isn't it? You take your life, turn it upside down, rip it apart into shreds. Where's your faith now? He wants to grow our faith. And the third purpose is to increase our awe. This is something that is so lacking in the church today. You see, after Jesus asked them two questions, the disciples are very unsettled and they turn and they ask a question. They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." You've heard of the calm before the storm, right? This is the storm after the calm. The sea is at rest, but the disciples are churning. You would think they would chill when the waves were still, but they're not. They start churning and they're terrified. They just kept being terrified. The storms made them afraid, but the power of Christ made them petrified. You see, they had a combination of fear and reverence. Because the deity of Christ is in full display. And they're twice as terrified of that than they are of the storm. Mark uses this Greek word again, mega. He actually uses it three times in this story. It's used to describe the great windstorm in verse 37. It's used to describe the great calm in verse 39. And he also uses it in 41 to say that they were filled with mega terror. After this huge windstorm is replaced by this huge calm, they are filled with huge terror. Awe. It was more frightening than what they had just experienced in the storm, and they realized that they are in the very presence of holiness. And this causes them to almost come unglued. And I wonder if the modern church today has overemphasized the fact that Jesus is our friend. I mean, he is. But have we put too much on Jesus being our friend and not enough on us losing a fear of God, A reverential awe of God willing to keep us from being afraid during adversity. Jesus reveals his plan through this perfect storm. Because his plans may be puzzling and they include problems, but his plan comes with his presence and his demonstration of power, but his plan always has a purpose for us. And we need to understand this holy fear of God, because I don't think as a church, not just Maranatha, as a church, a Western church, we don't get it. And as I reflected on this passage, I realized that we're in the same boat. Pun intended. We all climbed into it with him this morning. But when storms come our way, we need to see how our plans can come alongside with his plans. Because we need to first of all know that Christ cares for you and he can help you in your crisis. See, the disciples accuse Christ of not caring. Let's not make that same mistake. Because this incident reveals both the humanity and the deity of the Lord Jesus. He fell asleep in the stern of the boat. That's his humanity. And when he spoke, it was completely calm. That's his deity. Christ is completely in control of everything. And we don't know what's coming, but Jesus does. He's great. He's mega. He's mega mega. He's everything. He is good. He is wise. Francis Chan asked this question. Can you worship a God who isn't obligated to explain his actions to you? Could it be that your arrogance, that makes you think God owes you an explanation? Folks, we all are going to go through the storms. I guarantee there will be storms. And if we're going to get to the other side, storms are going to become. And it's easy to be faithful in worship when there is fair weather, but it's a lot harder when the hurricanes of life hit us. Remember this, the only way to the other side is through the storm. Settle this right now so that you're not surprised when the storms come. Because if you're going through a storm, have Jesus in your boat. Recognize that he is there. Look at verse 36. There were also other boats with him. And only one of them had Jesus. Is he in your boat? Is the Lord in your life today? Because Jesus can still the winds and the waves. Means that he can clobber your addictions. He can put your marriage back together. He can lead you into the future. He can calm any storm that you are facing right here today. Let's go over with him. He didn't say let's go under. So make sure that Jesus is steering your ship. Are you allowing Jesus to be the commander of your boat? You guys ever seen those crazy bumper stickers? Jesus is my co-pilot. Have you seen the crazier ones that go along with it? Jesus is my pilot. Well, when you're driving that car, I hope you got your hands on the wheel. Right? Jesus is there with you, steering your ship. Are you allowing him to be the commander of your boat? Because in verse 38, Jesus was asleep on the cushion. And it's a very specific cushion. Not all boats have cushions. Let me tell you, that little aluminum boat had no cushion of any type. But on this particular cushion, this is the use of the definitive article, which shows the cushion, a specific cushion, the cushion that was reserved for the captain of the ship. Is he steering your life? Have you given him control of everything? If you have not been saved and you're not allowing Jesus to steer your life, you are heading into a huge storm on the day of judgment. And so this morning, I encourage you to have him steer your boat. But I also want to encourage you to grow in your awe of Christ. See, the Apostle Paul went through some terrible storms in Acts 27, and the Lord did not calm them. Paul had great faith. He had a shipwreck. The disciples had little faith, and the Lord stilled the sea. No, don't go there. It all has to do with his sovereign will. He may not still the storms that you're in right now, but he can still you. He may not change your circumstances, but if you surrender to him, he will change you in the circumstances. You see, the greatest danger was not the wind or the waves, it was the unbelief of their hearts. Our greatest problems are within us, not around us. Yeah, those things around us are storms. They cause us fear. But know that Jesus is near. He is always, always there with us. He promised that. And his promises are always true.